This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 27th, 2016, episode 1597, brought to you today by Horsewear Blankets. Good morning, Horse World!
The holidays are here.
You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
Do you think it's safe for us to be up here? Thank you for making me a part of this.
You eat what you like, I'll eat what I like. Yeah! Land ho!
Well, hidey-hoity, everybody. The Hit'em crew is out and about gathering holiday-esque adventures with which to entertain you in the coming new year. So sit back and enjoy this mashup of previously aired equestrian edutainment from the Horse Radio Network Audio Vaults, featuring bits of training wisdom from Mary Kitzmiller, Lynn Palm, Sean Patrick, and Marcia Sapp.
Well, we are. It is time for Mary's trainer tip of the month, and this week you're talking about rising to the level of the horse.
Yeah, you know, I had this conversation in an interview a little while back, and this one's a little bit more abstract. This one isn't as easy as, you know, getting your horse to cross a tarp or whatever. But it was one of the biggest epiphanies I had in horsemanship. So, you know, I totally feel the need to share it anytime it pops into my head. And what I mean by rising to the level of the horse, and I don't know where that phrase came from. I think it came from a clinic I did with Martin Black. I think it came from him. And it was actually at that clinic that I had that kind of huge epiphany. So, you know, in my own experience with horses, when I started out, I learned a program, typical natural horsemanship program, and it had a lot of desensitizing and getting your horse used to all the things that could go wrong, and you know, a lot of flexing and making them really soft and all of that. And the idea when I first started working with colts especially was to get the horse pretty dumbed down so that I couldn't fall off so that I would stay safe. So, you know, that worked for me in the beginning. But what the result of it was, so the result was I had very safe horses. I did not get bucked off of the colts I started. They didn't do, you know, bad things that horses can sometimes do when they're frightened or reactive. And so that was great. So I had these really safe horses, and I was training horses for the public that were really safe. Bomb-proof was the word we used. That's what I tried to do with the horse. I tried to get them not to react to anything, to where I could set off fireworks and they weren't going to budge. And I'd stand on them and crack stock whips and all that fun stuff. And it was really cool. And the clients were happy. But where I started hitting a little snafu was when I went to train performance horses. And then the same horse that was so great, at 30 days of training, at 90 days of training, when it's time for him to start doing a high-level performance job, we'd run into trouble because now my horse wasn't sensitive anymore. I kind of taught him to ignore everything. So I found out it was really unfair for me to train horses in that way, to where, you know, I get them to where they ignore nearly everything. But then when it's time for them to go on a cow or, you know, do a really fast, high level reining maneuver where they need to be really light and feely and sensitive, they just couldn't do that. It was very difficult to put the life back in them. And that's when I learned you can take the life out of the horse all day long, but you cannot put the life back in. I mean, you can, but it's very difficult. So what that taught me was, okay, you know, in the beginning when I was green and I didn't know what I was doing, it was important for me to get that horse down to my level and teach him to take care of me. But once I got good enough, now it's important for me to rise to his level, and it's important for me to take care of him. And so for those of you out there, you know, if I was training a horse that was just going to be a trail horse his whole life, you know, the way I was doing it in the beginning, it would not be a bad way to go about things, because that horse just kind of needs to go down the trail and ignore a lot of stuff that might pop in his path and take, you know, maybe take care of a young rider and an older rider, a novice rider. But if you are looking to advance your horsemanship and you want to get into high level dressage or cow work, or you just want to be a better horseman, at some point in your career, you're going to have to learn how to keep the life in that horse. And the best, you know, the best time I've ever had with horses was when I realized how wonderfully sensitive and soft they already are. And I learned how to keep that life and keep that sensitivity in the horse, but also keep myself safe. And that's a really hard line to walk. And it's kind of a lifetime pursuit of mine.
That is a hard line to walk.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, hard to explain, a little bit more abstract, but I just kind of want to start planting that seed in people's minds who want to go to that next level.
Huh, interesting. And do you think that anybody that gets to the higher levels in whatever discipline has that light bulb moment with each particular horse, or they don't get there?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I think some people kind of always start from that place. You know, maybe they have the great luck and fortune to work with someone, you know, to start in a program that's already doing that, and that's just kind of how they learn. You know, or maybe more people have my experience. You know, in the beginning, I just had to stay safe because I didn't know enough to help a horse out of a situation. So I had to make that horse help me. You need to save my butt if I make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, you've got to switch it around and say, okay, I know that you're thinking about running and you're scared and you're active. I'm going to be here to help you out of it. And a lot of that involves developing an independent seat and making sure your riding skills are up to snuff. And then, of course, having really good timing of knowing what's going to happen before it even happens. And, you know, I heard a saying, it might have been in reference to the Dorrances, but they said, you know, I think there were three Dorrance brothers who were accomplished horsemen. And they said one of them could ride a buck out of any horse, and one of them could talk a horse out of bucking. But the other one, and I don't know who was who in this aspect, the other one could make it so bucking never entered that horse's brain. And so when, you know, that's a lofty goal. When you get in to be, you know, a good horseman, I think you need to work with horses in a way, not that you're trying to fix problems, or even, you know, that you're trying to stop problems once they happen, but that the horse, it just never enters their mind to even be that way. So that's
you know, that's a good point. We're working. I'm going through that right now with my driving pony. In his training, we're at the point where we're right at that line now where we're working on safety because he's had a bolting issue with certain noises. So we're working on desensitizing him to the noises and all of that. And his first reaction is to bolt. And, you know, whether you're riding or driving, bolting's never a fun experience. So, you know, we're at that point now where we're working on safe, but also not dull and boring, you know, so that, you know, he doesn't get to the point where he's lethargic. And, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. There is that time, and we're at that time with him where it could go either way, and we have to be very careful. So we're really at that time, and we're hoping that, and I believe that horses, like in anything, like with humans in training of any kind for anything, I used to teach sales training, and I used to see this all the time. There's always a series of little light bulbs that go on. All through your training, you can see the light bulbs going on in your horses, and you can see it. I mean, road to the horse, you could see the light bulbs are going on in that 3-day period of time. And, but you know, some light bulbs are bigger than others. Some have more wattage than others, and some affect the future more than others. And so we're at that point now where I know that, you know, we got the 100-watt light bulb now, and, you know, it's going to affect his future and how we handle him over the next month, and how he comes through that segment of training that we're at now.
Oh, yeah. And you know, that's really tricky stuff, you know, especially working with young horses that you're having to teach everything to. And, you know, speaking of Road to the Horse, I always think that the best competitors that I've ever seen, Chris Cox would be one of them. Those are the ones, you know, I've been to colt starting competitions and events where I saw someone do a really good job with a horse, but you could see a lot of effort in what they were doing. You know, you just saw a lot of effort. And the good ones, the great ones, are the ones who look like, man, he just lucked out and he got
a good horse,
the easiest horse in the bunch. You know, what a lucky guy that he got that horse. And, you know, actually, you know, if you gave him 12 horses, you would see that, man, he looked out and got 12 really nice horses.
Well, it happened because they were each training two, and both of his horses were like 1 and 2, and they both looked that way. So you're
right.
Yeah,
didn't he have all the luck? He just got the nicest horses in the bunch. Yeah. And that's why they did that, was to say, you know, okay, yeah, it is possible to look out and get a, you know, get a nice one to work with, but can you do it with two? And you know, so a horseman like Chris, you know, really show that, you know, it just looks effortless. It's like, man, what a lucky guy. He got just a sweet horse.
And isn't that true of anybody who's really accomplished at anything? It's tennis or, you know, whatever it is. They're really good at that, and they make it look easy. You know, we have the added thing of having a horse with a mind and an attitude, whatever that is. So, you know, but, you know, tennis ball doesn't usually have that. But, you know, they just make it look easy. It's the same thing, you know. You don't see the 25 years it took him to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And, you know, all the times they failed on the way there to learning how to do it. We just get hurt
more than they do in the failures on the way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Ours tend to hurt more.
They say a good rider can hear his horse speak to him. But a great rider can hear his horse whisper. The years he's given me. Nobility without conceit. Friendship without envy. Beauty without vanity. A loyalty without compromise. I borrowed freedom when we rode. The history of mankind and civilization rode with us. His body took the weight of mine, and I was carried through. I can still hear that whisper.
For more information on the complete line of horseware turnouts, including Rambo, Rhino, and Amigo, visit horseware.com or ask your local retailer or online supplier. For more information on horseware.com.
Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Can't you hear those bells? Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, and I know I'm going home. Snowflakes are falling, my old homes are calling, tall pines are humming, 'cause Christmas times are coming. Can't you hear those bells ringing, ringing, joy, joy, hear them singing, when it's snowing I'll be going back to my country home. 'Cause Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, and I know I'm going home, yeah. Holly's in the window, home's where the wind blows. You can't walk for running, 'cause Christmas times are coming. Can't you hear those bells ringing, ringing, joy, joy, hear them singing, when it's snowing I'll be going back to my car. country home. Back home when Christmas times are coming. Can't you hear those bells ringing, ringing? Joy, joy, hear them singing. When it's snowing, I'll be going back to my country home. Cause Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, and I know I'm going. Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, Christmas times are coming, and Lord, I'm going home.
Well, it is so exciting this evening to have Lynn Palm on from Fox Grove Farm. How are you, Lynn?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are so happy to have you on the show, and we snagged you for a couple interviews this show. So thanks for being such a good sport and staying on with us. And we wanted to do our first discussion. We were talking a little bit off air on Western dressage and the kind of the whole movement. I mean, it's become an incredibly big movement. And can you kind of talk to us a little bit about your involvement and how you started and how you see things going these days?
Well, my involvement is I grew up in the dressage saddle, so I've used the basics of dressage principles for as a multidiscipline trainer, competitor, doing many different disciplines. But my heart has always been with dressage and specializing with the quarter horses because I wanted to always try many different things. It led to riding both English and Western. And a short 3 years ago, this move, and it's a great move from a group of people that have Morgans, Arabs, Frisians, I think Andalusians, and these people all got together and started a nonprofit with Western dressage. And it really has been amazing to see a new discipline become so popular so fast, and for many, many different reasons. But my true heart behind it all is being involved in a stock horse or Western horse industry, even though the English horse has always been my favorite, and I've excelled with the English horse to do some Western events also. Involvement is, people love it. It gives them something more solid, substantial because of having levels and something that they can follow like traditional dressage. It's they want to ride well for their horses. They love the fact of what they feel in the harmony of horse and rider because they are riding with more accuracy and correctness. They're understanding their horse better. There's just so many facets that are just interesting people. And one thing where a huge market of our horse industry is that middle-aged woman, you know, they like that comfortable Western saddle that's got a horn right in front.
Yeah.
You know, and you can dress up in different outfits and, you know, it's just, it's a rage right now. It's amazing.
So, Lynn, I have some questions. So,
okay.
What is the nonprofit where people can kind of get some more information about?
Yes. Well, I have followed the Western Dressage Association of America. There is a couple others out there, but they're the ones that are the first ones to do it, and they set up correctly a nonprofit. They as a national organization, and the states, different states, are following it. Florida is one of the fastest growing, Florida and Colorado, the biggest ones right now, but many states, I'm not sure how many are also involved, but Why I'm supporting them is because USEF recognized the people that are involved and their intentions for the correct education, and to mirror the traditional dressage, USEF has approved that organization.
Awesome.
And that's where that gives, for me, the credentials and the substance to say, hey, now we've got something that is our national governing body that's saying Western dressage is okay. It's a part of the industry that's needed, and they're moving forward with it. And that's where we're supporting that.
Fantastic.
Yep.
So you talked about the levels. So, you know, us as dressage rider, used to training level, first level, on up to Grand Prix. Can you describe a little bit of what are the levels?
Yep. The levels are for it, again, as a young three-year-old, and I think 2017, it will allow levels to grow because of USEF. They have to be so long in a certain phase. But there's an intro level, just like traditional dressage, walk and trot. The training level in Western dressage is called basic level, which is your there's four tests to each level, whereas in traditional, there's three tests in each level. But it's your introduction of your canter work in that level. And then your first level, second, and there's third level in the Western dressage that is that's offered right now. And it goes up to movements as in the first level they have the yielding, just like in traditional. They have lengthening, starting to lengthen at the trot. Your second level, then you get into your lateral work of your shoulder in, your revers, haunches in, your walk canter departs, canter walk. Your third level then has a little more through the change of lead, through the trot, through the walk. They don't have flying change yet. That'll come in 2017. But they do have turn on the haunches. They have a pivot. They have the lengthenings of the canter, counter canter. So there's a
similar
good mixture of the mirroring. The traditional dressage. And I think as it grows into a fourth level and where it goes from there is the development of the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you'll ever see sliding stops, but you may see, you know, a pivot that is simulated to like a reining spin, but not with speed. I think you'll see tepi lead changes. I think you'll see canter pirouettes. Those are all the things that a Western horse also can do, or a horse can do in a Western saddle, I should say.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So I have got to ask, you said outfits. Talk to me. We get
that's so cool. You know, in the competition, and I worked with a wonderful company, and a gal that is a dynamic person, has developed the Hobby Horse clothing. It's a whole Western line, and she's just done amazing of educating and a moderate clothing line for the Western show world. And I've worked with her, and really there's four types of outfits that you can create with the Western dressage. Of course, one is mirroring the Spanish outfit, which that's where it originated. Portugal, Spain, South America came up to California, across the United States. So Spanish influence is, you know, the short type jacket, the hat that's flat brimmed, a flat top hat, the high top boots, like your English boots, in a black type of an outfit, but the Spanish type outfit. Then you have the vaquero, which I really like. The vaquero is a little, it's vests, it's scarves, it's shirts, it's the chink chaps, which is a short chap below the knee with fringe, high top Western boots. They're really fun. And again, that same kind of Spanish hat with a top, flat brim, top, flat topped hat. And then of course you've got the show ring type outfit, which is your standard hat and chap Western, outfit with either, a jacket, a vest, a little bit of bling if you want.
Ooh.
well, shoes, boots, and stuff. And then you have your rancher style, which is a little more casual. It can be a simple shirt, Western hat, with or without chaps, short or long chaps. You know, a little more casual, but a rancher style competitive outfit.
So that would be in jeans, right?
That's awesome. What,
you know, and us ladies, we like to do those kinds of things.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I know Phil's Vicaro. Not the one to the outfit, but I was like, what? Talk to me about this outfit.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I like it. And so,
but the tack is conservative. Rarely are you seeing much. You can do show ring. You can do some silver. But it's more working style equipment that really is you're seeing the most of. Nice. Of course, that goes along with the Spanish ranching and vaquero outfits. You don't have the silver and the bling that you see in the show ring in Western classes today.
Oh, I love it. So,
I had a quick question. You know, is this all the riding done with one hand?
Well, you know, that's the other best part about the Western. No, it can be done with two hands. It can be also done with one. It's optional. Of course, one always with a curb bit, but two hands with a snaffle or a curb bit. Or, again, two hands always with a hackamore can also be used. That's no bit. That's a traditional Western bridle, hackamore. And then you can also use what they call, which comes from the Spanish vaquero training, is there's a graduation, and this is where the event may evolve, but there's a graduation with the real vaquero training where actually they start the horses in a hackamore, go to a snaffle. Then instead of like us in traditional go to a full bridle, they go to a little teensy hackamore, which they call a bocita, that sits underneath a curb bit. And that curb bit, they ride with two reins.
Oh, wow.
Like the same as a traditional full bridle. But they do that as a graduation in the true, correct training to then graduate to riding just with a curb bit.
Wow. Okay. That makes sense. That's very interesting. Now, Lynn, you came out with a book because when I was searching on Amazon about Western dressage, you have a book out to help people start, don't you?
Yes, I do. That's Discovering Western Dressage. And then also one that I have had a lot of success with. And again, it's really helped the Western world is The Rider's Guide to True Collection. And I guess I've just seen with this evolution actually over the last 20 years in the Western world, people riding Western trying to collect horses and not having any idea what's going on and how to do it.
This tip brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, the shoulder relief girth that Reese and Philip both love. And here's why.
The Saddle Fit solution you have been waiting for is finally here. TotalSaddleFit.com is proud to introduce the shoulder relief girth. This strategically shaped girth actually moves the girth line of your saddle back over 1 inch, thereby freeing your horse's shoulders from the saddle. Traditional girths pull saddles up against a horse's shoulders and often over the top of the shoulders. The shoulder relief girth's recessed ends allow for the billets to buckle into the girth farther back to give your horse unparalleled freedom of motion. We are so certain that your saddle will fit better and your horse will be more comfortable that for a limited time we are offering a 30-day, 110% money-back guarantee. If you are not totally satisfied with your shoulder relief girth, send it back for a full refund plus 10% of the purchase price. Don't wait. Order now for the best saddle fit solution available.
At TotalSaddleFit.com. Visit TotalSaddleFit.com.
So, Lynn, how about for this week's Total Saddle Fit Tip of the Week? Can you go with us and talk to us a little bit about your stages of collection and a little bit about, you know, how what you go through in the book? Because it's fantastic.
Okay. Well, first, the main thing is being able to know your horse, understand your horse, whatever level it's at, and to have obedience and manners and response and command with your horse on the ground. I do that from either working in hand, lunging, lunging bidding, long lining. And why those things are very important. One, it's a variety that you can do with training your horse, but it's also you're on the ground. You've got your eyes to visually see how your horse is developing or where he's at or new goals that you're going to advance him toward and when. So those are all important parts of the training and evaluation of your horse. But then the biggest part of the book is I also, people don't know what natural self-carriage is. And I loved one time when I saw Reimer Klimke give a lecture saying that they never start their horses at least until 3 years old. They're in a pasture growing up and yada, yada. But when they do, their first year under saddle is only riding with loose reins and letting them learn natural self-carriage. Same thing I do.
Excellent.
They learn to carry my weight. I guide them. They know how to guide with my reins because of the ground training, but I guide with legs and feet and just let them learn to carry themselves.
Lynn, I just want to talk about that a minute because I think that's such an important thing is because, you know, a lot of riders, when they're starting horses, you know, they have all the tools there. But I think in the beginning, you have to just sort of let the horse be and let them make mistakes because I think in the beginning, if you spend your whole time sort of packaging the horse together, they don't really get a sense of, you know, moving on their own. And what happens when they put a little bit too much weight on the, you know, on the inside front leg or something, and they stumble or they fall a little bit. But I think that's all part of the horse learning for himself what to do so that, you know, when you start to actually do real collection, that the horse, that the rider doesn't have to do, you know, too much and overdo it. And then, you know, and then you physically can't get strong enough to actually do real collection when we're talking about piaf passage, pirouettes, you know.
Absolutely.
So like I said, it starts at 3 years old so you don't have to go back and redo all of that work all over again.
Right.
Let the horse go too fast sometimes or, you know, sometimes they get a little too slow. They have to figure out that that's not great for them in the end anyways, and the rider just has to get out of the way. I think that's a really important point, you know, as far as, you know, when I start horses in my program. So
absolutely. Yep. And each horse has a different timeline. You do the same kinds of things, but I don't think people enough allow that time for natural self-carriage. And it's their first development. Some horses, it takes 10 months to a year. Some horses, it's till the next year and a half. But it's time that I do things so simple, but I just let them learn to carry themselves. And then I start to train them.
Yeah. No,
you know, then I start to do gradually with the baby steps of them starting to learn more controlled transitions and self-carriage and straightness and lateral movement. And, you know, you bring them along as you do in that first level to then as the levels take them up, then the horse gets stronger. And really, the horse collects himself. I never teach him or compact him, as you say, to get him to collect.
Yeah, sure.
The development of the horse, they collect on their own and what you're doing with them and them getting stronger in their body and their self-carriage.
And that's the, I think you're just right on with, it takes time.
Yeah.
You know, I can't go to the gym. If I were to start to go to the gym tomorrow, it's going to take me 6 months or so to really get into training shape for, you know, whatever I want to do, run a marathon or I don't know.
Or before you add the next thing, right? You have to sort of start at a base and work from there, right?
And I think you've got to think the same with horses. You know, it really takes time and I just literally had a lesson right before I came in with a horse that has come in for training and she's been in now 2 months and I wish it's a young rider and I wish we had taken a picture of the horse when the first day, day 30, day 60.
Yeah.
You know, the horse herself, it's a mare, she looks completely different even in her body. And we literally had the same discussion. And that is, you know, over it's a younger horse. It takes time. Her muscles aren't used to it. Her body isn't used to it.
Sure.
And so, and I loved how you said every horse is on their own timeline. This is like every human.
Without, you know? And that's why I go back to the ground a lot because then I get to use my eye. Of course, you can feel, you can have a ground person when you're training and developing the horse and or rider. But if it's yourself training, you know, which we, even our students, we want them to ride on their own. But that's where I always still have make them come back to a part of it where you put your eye on the ground and you get to see your own horse and how he's doing what you're asking him to do.
That's why dressage riders love mirrors so much.
Yeah.
It's not to check the makeup every day, right?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I don't have mirrors, but
yeah.
I do go back to the ground for the same reason. Yes, that's right.
Well, videoing, I mean, I think we have a lot of different tools now that we didn't have or that are easy. You know, somebody can take a video on your phone. You know, my husband's great at that. Like, hey, honey, I need you for 5 minutes. And boom, he can take a video and I can see it right away. And I think that's the deal with collection. Collection, you know, you read the scale of training in any discipline and you think, oh, well, that sounds pretty easy. No, it takes a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, the thing I saw was a little bit interesting. Maybe we want to go into that. We've got a few minutes here. It's just on social media, we saw sort of, a description of how a person can sort of feel the collection. Do you know what I'm talking about?
With their body. It's a picture. You're helping a young lady. Yep. On the ground. So can you kind of go through that with us a little bit?
And I'm sorry, I didn't understand fully your question.
Oh, I just thought there were some tips that we saw that a person can imitate collection with their own body.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Yes. I was at a wonderful clinic in Texas. I can't remember who was, it was a German man that was teaching that was in the United States for a long time. And he did this demonstration with a person where they could literally have an idea to understand the biomechanics of how a horse collects. And I've done this so many times, and especially again with people that don't understand, or where I'm seeing more people that think that they're collecting their horse, but they're riding too much from front to back, and the horse is totally on the forehand. And you simply, and I've done this so many times, put a person, they got to be the horse on the ground. Their hands are the horse's front legs, and the knees are the horse's back legs. And the great tip, if somebody can do this after, and as I'm explaining it, it's very easy to do. You get your hands right underneath your shoulders and your knees right underneath your hips. Now, as you are there on the ground, make sure you've got a rug because you don't want your knees to start hurting. You're going to already put your head upward in a comfortable position. So in other words, your head's like the pole of the horse.
Okay.
The second you put your head down, you're going to immediately feel more weight on your hands. Okay?
Makes sense. Yeah.
Get back in that position.
I'm working on it. Yeah, it's true.
And you want to feel as much evenness of weight on your hands as your knees. But at the same token, you have to be able to say, where's the more weight on your hands or your knees? It's always the hands because of the weight of your head and neck, just like the horse.
Yeah.
So as the horse develops and collects, he has to get in an uphill balance, of course, bearing more weight behind, engaging more of the hind legs underneath to lighten the forehand. So you tuck your knees underneath your belly and you're going to find that there's less weight on the front legs. Well, actually, I got to back up just for a second. In both those positions, you say, let's go ahead and make a canter depart. So you lift your hands up off the ground, and boy, you can do it easy. In the first one, which is the self-carriage, the second one, you bring your knees underneath your body in that uphill balance, and wow, now they can really lift their hands up off the ground and do a canter depart. Well, that's why a horse can do a higher jump. That's why a horse can turn faster around a barrel. That's why a horse can do tempi lead changes and carry their pirouettes and passage and piaffe. But I said, now let's do what most of people think collection is by pulling their head in and head setting. Well, when that happens, now you got to draw your knees behind your hips.
Makes sense.
And get them back behind your hips. Now let's put that head down because that's what the horse is going to do when you ride too much from your hands, seesaw, and head set. Now let's try to do that canter depart. They cannot lift
can't
the front hand
yeah,
off the ground.
Yeah.
And they're saying, I can. I said, what you say? And I was just saying, I can't do it. I said, well, that's what your horse is saying.
Yeah, yes, there you go.
It's so true.
And yeah, that was kind of cool.
Coolest example.
It's really cool. And the pictures are great. And you can really see, actually, too, when the rider has to tuck their knees under, they have to tuck their bum under, too.
Yes, and that's exactly the horse does the same thing with his hip.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. You've got to tuck your bum. You got to tuck your hip.
Yep. So that's an excellent example for the people that we get, and there's so much still in the Western world, they think that a headset is collection. Mm-hmm. You know, as you collect the horse over time in the body, and the horse is able to get that muscle out behind the jaw, they can flex at the pole, and they're going to have a headset, and you're going to have a connection to it without setting the head. It comes in time.
Well, Lynn, you have been awesome tonight. We have learned so much, and thank you so much. You really spent a lot of time with us, and I really appreciate it. And I hope our listeners will take advantage. We can get questions to Lynn and answer them here on the show about Western dressage. She's been so gracious to come on. And Lynn, how would our listeners find you online if they have any more questions?
Oh, if they do, they can go to my website, lynnpalm.com. Of course, we've got the Facebook and all the social media. The same thing, just my name, Lynn Palm, you can find it. And if somebody's got questions, right on our website, you can ask us, and we get the questions, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that people have. And really the best part of it all is if I have a chance, just like I know both of you, if you can give back to somebody and make their horse happier, that's our jobs as professionals.
Well, we're going to take a quick break for our song, and then we're coming back with our next guests. We have Sean Patrick and Marcia Sapp coming up, who we also saw at Road to the Horse. But first, we have to take a break for our song. We have Adrian here today with a song called Boots and Pearls, and I'm playing this because we saw plenty of that at Road to the Horse.
Boots, that's what I wear. Pearls, seems fair with my blue jeans, diamond rings, and roses in my hair. He was just the boys on that. Come on. seems fair. Roses in my
That's Boots and Pearls by Adrian. You can find all of her music at buckaroogirl.com. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Mary Kitzmiller on the Mary Kitzmiller training episode that we do once a month. And, of course, it is the second Thursday of every month. We got Coach Jen in the producer chair today. And we're going to bring on our next guests here, both of who we saw at Road to the Horse. Sean competed there also as a wild card competitor. We have Sean Patrick. Good morning, Sean. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Good. And we also have Marcia Sapp, who's been a guest on shows here on the Horse Radio Network over the years. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you this morning?
Great. Now, before we get started, Marcia, bear with me for a second, because Mary mentioned earlier in the show that one of the things that you guys had to do as wildcard competitors in the obstacle course was you had to go into an outhouse and sing the Star Spangled Banner while your horses were hanging around outside the door wondering what the hell you were doing. And I just happened to have a recorder going during that time.
Oh, no.
Mary didn't know about this, Sean. Now, the sound quality is not great here for everybody listening at home, but because I was recording this in the audience. But the first person you'll hear is a certain co-host of mine. And then the guy who gets the words all wrong will be Sean. So
this is my show, and I vehemently object.
Yeah, but Mary, I have the button, so
okay.
That's you lose. Yeah, here we go. I'm not even going to play the rest of that because you can't hear it with the audience going. Once you sang "O Canada," you could have just shut up and not done anything else. You were good.
That was fun. I thought it was good for a chuckle.
I'm sorry the quality wasn't any better. I really wanted to hear Mary's very sped up version of the song. Your tempo was a little fast there, Mary. I'm just saying.
My heart was pumping. I was hearing the recording. I'm like, who let that chipmunk on the radio?
That was funny. Well, we're not here to talk about that. What we're here to talk about today is one of the fastest growing disciplines in the horse world. I think I can safely say that, and that's Western dressage. Marcia, you know, we talked about Western dressage, you know, over the past couple of years and through the battle between the two organizations and all that stuff. And, you know, we had them both on and all that. It seems like 20 years ago now. But it's really only been a couple years, and it truly is one of the fastest-growing disciplines, isn't it?
It is. It is. We are approaching our third year of Western dressage being USEF sanctioned and recognized. And I don't know if I've seen anything in my lifetime grow as fast as we've seen Western dressage growing. Last year was my first year at the World Championship Western Dressage Show in Oklahoma, and the entries were huge. It was huge, and people were there from everywhere in the country and Canada, and the classes were filled, and people were excited about this.
I want to delve into that a little bit before we get to you know, what makes it tick and everything. Why do you think that is? Do you think were there a lot of people out there that just were, you know, can't do sliding stops and fast turns? Or is it people who were trail riding before that are getting it like into the obstacle classes as well? That's becoming very popular now. Do you think that it's those people that were only trail riding and now are looking to do something a little different? Who's getting into it?
You know, I think the people that are getting into this Western dressage is diverse, as the horses that are in it. you have a section of folks that are intimidated by the big, powerful warm bloods that don't have a horse that's capable to compete at the higher levels because they don't have the big, powerful warm bloods on the English side, yep, that are looking into this as an alternative for their horses. I think we're looking at people who see it as a valuable cross-training opportunity for their existing horses, whether they be competitive trail horses, competitive reining horses, competitive Western pleasure horses. I think people are seeing it as a valuable cross-training tool for those horses as well. And I think you're seeing it in those section of folks that have never had experience showing, and they want to find something fun and positive to do with their horses. And the Western dressage has a lot of appeal because you can really start at an elementary level at just the walk and jog and work your way up with your horse with progressive training and with the progressive tests that are offered in Western dressage. So I think we're seeing a pretty big cross-section of folks that are interested and excited about it. I, of course, come from a dressage background. I compete in English dressage at the USDF level. And I had a horse last year that I showed that was a national champion at third level in USDF, which is English dressage. But my horse also went to the world Western dressage show, and he was a reserve world champion last year. So I was able to cross-train my horse and to do two completely different disciplines with him that really made him a better horse.
He wasn't in the middle of the test going, should I do a lope? Should I do a trot? Should I do a canter? And he ends up with a lope, canter, trot. He didn't get confused in the middle.
People ask about this. People ask this to me all the time. The difference in between a lope and a canter. How do I know if my horse is jogging? How do I know if my horse is trotting? And, you know, the judges for Western dressage are so well educated on this that, you know, the gait depends on what's best for the horse.
Okay. So they're
best for that individual horse.
Gotcha. So you're seeing all different types of horses, not just quarter horses in there or Appaloosas?
No. I mean, we saw at the World Show, we saw a lot of quarter horses. We saw paint horses. We saw half slingers. We saw, of course, my Mustang. We saw a couple of the Andalusians and Lusitanos, Frisian. We saw all sorts of different horses. And the great thing about the Western dressage is that they're offering gated horse classes as well. So those folks with the gated horses can also participate, and their horses are being judged according to the way that they go naturally.
Okay, don't tell me your horse won the gated class too, because then I'm not going to believe you.
That what?
I said, don't tell me your horse won the gated class too.
No, my horse did not.
Okay.
Go in the gated horse class, but okay. maybe I'll get to ride one here in the next couple of years and do that too. It looks like fun.
Mary?
Do you recognize Z-Dogs is my question, because I'm totally on board if you do.
Do I recognize what?
Z-Donks, which is a zebra donkey hybrid.
Oh, you know, I am willing to bet that the classes will be open to those horses as well. Would you like to come this year, Mary? We'll look for you.
Yeah. If you let my Z-Donk in, I'm game.
I think that would be great. I think we had more breeds represented at the World Championship Western Dressage Show than probably any other show in the United States last year. It was fantastic.
Mary, you really have to get to the point where you're doing something with it first before you bring it to
I should probably. Can Thanks. I lead her in the pin and shake a bucket of
her? They have a lead line class for zebra donkey crossbred.
We are talking about Mary Kitzmiller here, so I'm sure we'll see that Z-Donk be going around bridleless in just a couple of weeks.
Oh, she goes around bridleless now.
Yeah, bridleless now, yeah. It's the bridle that's the problem.
You do a great 5-meter circle as I'm running around with the grain.
Sean, where do you come into play in Western dressage?
Well, actually, it's kind of a natural step for me to take toward it, because we have so many students that are really interested in developing their horses, but they're not necessarily ready to jump into the reining pen, and they really don't want to get into the AQHA showing circuit, but they want to have a way to give themselves some smaller goals that they can build on. And with the dressage test, you can do that. So you can jump in with your horse, a quarter horse, or whatever kind of horse you have, and you can do the early tests. And as you develop your horse and as you get better, you can just improve the level of the testing, which takes away all the intimidation for a lot of these recreational and, you know, people that want to show their horses but aren't maybe professionals or open riders that do this every day. So I spend a lot of time teaching the foundation work with horses, with people, teaching body control and simple dressage movements anyway. So I'm excited to get more involved and even take a couple of my own horses this year and do some testing. And I'm excited to do a clinic with Marcia in a week and a half. We're going to kind of leapfrog each other. I'm going to do some foundation exercises and lessons in the clinic, and she's going to come in the hour after me and give the ins and outs of Western dressage and also do some foundation lessons and whatnot. And we're just going to go back and forth for 2 days with two groups. So I'm looking forward to seeing how all that turns out, and I think there's a lot of excitement with the people that are attending. So,
well, Sean, I just wanted to tell you, I was just on EquestrianCollections.com and ordered you up some white breeches, so they'll be there in time.
Okay.
Mary, you actually had a serious question.
I'm very vulnerable right now because I have a head cold, so I'll probably end up wearing them. Oh,
yeah, you need the little top, I don't know what you call it, their little top hat and tails. I think that would be precious.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. We could put a top hat on Sean. We could make that happen.
I'd do it.
You would.
I would do it.
So anyway, so I'm looking at your clinic flyer, and it's saying that it is a Western dressage and balanced horsemanship clinic. Sean, can you elaborate on what you mean by balanced horsemanship?
Well, I was more, my focus for my one-hour sessions throughout the 2 days will be on body control. So I'm going to talk about the training pyramid that you would see in dressage texts and how that applies to the Western horse. And I think as we kind of get into the topic with the riders and we start talking about developing a horse from beginning to end, that people will start seeing that quality is quality and good horsemanship is good horsemanship regardless of the style. So you can be riding various styles, but you're still interested in rhythm and relaxation, and you're still interested in good impulsion, and you're still interested in, you know, subtle signaling and a horse that responds willingly and is carrying themselves in a weight-bearing posture that's healthy for them and so forth. So I think that as people educate themselves and then actually try doing what we're doing with their horses, they're going to see that there really isn't this big divide between the disciplines. And I think it'll be a fun, I think the first people through the door right now doing Western dressage might get, you know, pointed at and ridiculed a little bit because it might seem a little dorky to some, but it really isn't. It's just a fun test that's not as intimidating as it might sound, and I think the people in the Western styles can lend themselves to this and still do their other performances, such as reining or pleasure or trail or hunt seat.
Well, I think, you know, especially from the reiner's point of view, this, I don't know where the wind's coming from. It's not me, I'm inside, but from the reiner's point of view, I've noticed a lot of reining guys are starting to sort of do this cross training. They're getting into ranch pleasure and other classes because, you know, when you bring your horse into a reining pattern and the stops are always in the same place and, you know, the spins are in the same place and lead changes are in the same place. When you can bring him in and here's a pattern where you're not going to turn the corner and run down and stop, and your horse has to, you know, maybe come around the corner and listen to you because he's got to perform a 20-meter circle or what have you. And so I think it's a really great way, even if you've got just a really tuned up reining horse, to sort of relax their mind and put them at ease and give them a different pattern to play with, because, you know, all the reining patterns are very similar. And so they kind of get into this routine where they think, you know, oh, I know what's coming next. Well, when you take them to something like Western dressage, you're going to mix things up for them. And I think it can really calm the horse that's relaxed and really freshen things up for the campaigned show horse. So I think that's really interesting. I definitely like to get into this. And I think it really ties in with the biomechanics about getting the horse to travel relaxed. So you mentioned training pyramid. Can you give us a crash course on what that is, and probably have Marcia weigh in on that as well?
I think one thing that a lot of riders don't fully understand, at least I didn't as a younger rider, before I learned what I've learned, is that things have to go in a certain order. You can't immediately jump to a level or an education level when a horse doesn't even have the basics before that. So everything has a prerequisite, and in order to develop a horse properly, you do have to go in a certain order. And the training pyramid is just that. It points out what your foundation is all the way up to the highest level, and what you don't immediately work on collection when you start a colt. You might immediately work on finding some rhythm at a walk, trot, a canter, and you work on relaxation. Because until they accept you and until they, get rid of their uncertainties, they're not going to be able to perform much else. So it just shows you in what order things should be taken care of. And Marcia, what do you think about the training pyramid? How does it apply to you and your students? Do you refer to it often?
We refer to it all the time. And interestingly enough, this was actually discussed at Road to the Horse last week. We talked about the clinicians creating rhythm and relaxation in the round pen with the young horses they were starting. First, the horses needed to be relaxed, and that's the bottom of our training scale. That is the foundation that we build upon. And then the horses had to have rhythm, rhythm at the walk, rhythm at the trot, rhythm at the lope. And the clinicians that rode to the horse built these things while they were sending their young horses around the round pen. And when we saw the clinicians working with their horses, we talked very much about that. The clinician worked in the horse on the ground in a manner where they were rhythmic with what they did with their motions, where the horse carried a rhythm at the jog and at the lope as it was going around the round pen. And rhythm and relaxation creates a quiet horse because they know what to expect. Without rhythm in your riding, the horse is erratic and always looking for the next thing. And then after we get rhythm and relaxation, we talk about straightness and impulsion from the hind legs. And both of those things make the horse's job easier. If the horse is driving from the hind legs, it's able to become more uphill and more light. And of course, the horse's job is easier, making it more relaxed, and of course, making our job easier. And then we move up the scale to suppleness and bending, and of course, collection being the end result. But it's only after we've developed the other things first. And, that rhythm and relaxation is important in everything we do with our horse, from grooming to walking to lunging to riding. That is the foundation upon which we build on. And we saw that even with the colt starting last week, which I was so pleased to watch and hear about.
This winter grooming tip is brought to you by Horsewear Blankets. Joining us are two of the top grooms in the country of Enter Philip Dutton's groom, Emma Ford, and Kat Hill from World Class Grooming. Well, our Horsewear winter grooming tip of the week, we have Emma with us, who's going to talk a little bit about keeping your blankets clean throughout the winter season. First of all, Emma, you're supposed to do that? Keep your blankets clean? I thought you just let them get all gross and then washed them at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, if you like crusty blankets by January, then that's down to you. But we like to not be holding our noses every time we put a blanket on a horse come January, February. So hopefully these couple of tips will help those guys. But so obviously, depending on where you are in the country, for a lot of us, our horses are in blankets the end of September and end up staying in blankets through to the beginning of April, end of April, depending on the weather. Any overwashing of any blanket is, not a good thing unless it's just a cotton sheet, because you can destroy the fill. Also, if you overwash the outside of a turnout, it actually takes away the effectiveness of the waterproof layering. So even every day, if you can, before you take the blanket off the horses, take a good stiff hard brush and knock the worst of the shavings or straw, and also obviously if they come in from outside, then you're going to knock the worst of the mud off. Should you come in with that sodden horse that's got a nice bit of mud all over its blanket, then we actually just hose it down and don't use any detergent. We just hose it down and let it dry naturally outside. As for the underside, the actual easiest way to keep your blankets nice and fresh would be to have some sort of underwear. We like to use like very breathable cotton sheets. The Amigo Stable sheet that also has a neck is easy to put on, fits really well, and they're a nice product that you can have two of and just switch them in and out as you wash them. And then the other thing you can do is use an ammonia neutralizing agent, such as one part vinegar to three parts water, and you can spray this on the areas of the blanket that is particularly have manure stains, pea stains on, and this helps to get rid of that nasty pea smell.
Makes them smell like a salad, but the pea smell's gone.
Yes. Salad over pea.
So the recommendation there would be the Amigo Stable sheet underneath to help keep that, which is easily washable, which is a
exactly.
Good suggestion. Yeah, great. Well, Emma, I know you guys have a terrific website. Where can I find that?
You can find us at worldclassgrooming.com, which is also our Instagram, Gmail account. So come and find us and look for our book on any equestrian website, World Class Grooming for the Competition Horse.
This tip was brought to you by Horseware. Have you ever wanted to own your own Rambo? The complete list of retailers is at horseware.com/trade as well. Open to U.S. and Canadian residents only. Go to horseware.com/trade today and replace that blanket with all the holes for one of the best blankets on the market, the Rambo Turnout Line.
And that's a wrap, everybody. You can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning or follow us on Twitter if you're one of those people who likes to live your life 150 characters at a time. Our handle is Horse Radio. And you can have all of the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go by downloading the free Horse Radio Network app for your iPhone or Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's free. And you can also listen via iTunes. And thanks again to our sponsor, Horseware Blankets. This is Coach Jen, and I'll be back again tomorrow with more Hit 'Em. So until then, go ride your horse!